You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Hey, what's up, Vox and Hops heads? I'm Matt, the vocalist of Cryptopsy and the host of the Vox and Hops podcast, brought to you by Sound Talent Media, where I sit down with fellow metal musicians to talk about their lives, music, and craft beer. Today's episode is a very special one, because not only am I sitting down with a fellow musician, I'm also sitting down with a brewer from one of Quebec's most exciting microbreweries. I am so stoked about this. I've been a fan of their brews for many years now. Get ready, everyone. This is Vox and Hops episode number 219 with Martin Lallier of Mont-Régis Bière Artisanale.
I warn you, what you are about to hear is very disturbing indeed.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Today I'm with Martin Lallier of Mont-Régis Bière Artisanale. I'm super, super stoked to be with you. I have been a fan of your brews for many, many years now, and I'm going to dive into that in a bit more detail in a bit. But first, let's start with a very simple yet complex question that I like to throw at people. How have you been coping with 2020?
Listening to a lot of music, making lots of beer. It has been a good year for us so far, although at the beginning of the pandemic, we were not sure where the market was going to go. There was a lot of uncertainty. I must say I was candid at first. I thought it was going to last a few weeks. And then we realized that the depth and the how important a phenomenon it is. And how it is even changing our social behavior. It's like we entered a completely different culture.
That's absolutely true. And I see it with my kids even. I'm wondering, because this is not over and it's not going to be over anytime soon. And I see it with my kids being so young, having a four-year-old, and you know, most of her life will have been lived in social isolation or having to do social distancing. I'm wondering what the effects on kids is going to be actually.
Yes. And when I was briefly at your house bringing some beers, I self-observed that I didn't feel as natural as I am with young children. I like to talk with them and ask them where they are in their lives. And I thought that they would not see my smile. And smile, the facial expression is such a huge part of our nonverbal communication. So this is going to be something for young children like yours and like my youngest six-year-old. That they will, of course, adapt to a return to normality. They will forget that. But there's going to be something that might stay with them for a good while.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it is like a barrier, having a mask. Because I do work in early childhood education when I'm not screaming for Cryptopsy or doing Vox and Hops. I hang out with little kids all day. And there's times during the day I'm thirsty, so I want to drink a glass of water or from my water bottle. And I take off my mask and they look at me and they laugh and they're like, look at his mouth. Look at his nose. This is something that happens to me. I think it's very, very funny.
Yeah.
speaking about the brews that you dropped off, we're about to share one right here. Vox and Hops is all about hanging out with my metal friends, talking about their lives, music, and craft beer. What beer are we going to be sharing?
We do a beer, a sour IPA, New England dish IPA, with very low bitterness. It's called IPA Festina. But I made a key lime pie a few months ago, and I thought, wow, this would be fun in a beer. So we basically changed the ops to go towards a more citrusy universe. And we found concentrated key lime juice.
Very cool.
And we just added that to the fermenter. And it really is a fun beer. I love it.
Awesome, awesome. Let me crack this open and pour it out. And let's see what it's got.
Cheers.
It's a gorgeous color. Absolutely beautiful. Cheers.
Cheers to you, man.
Oh, yeah, creamy.
Lactose, a bit of vanilla.
Ooh, if you close your eyes, it tastes like the pie. This is wild. Super fresh, acidy. It's amazing, amazing, amazing.
Good fun.
Cheers to that. Very creative. How many times does that happen, the translation between you cooking something and then subsequently making a beer based upon that influence?
Well, looking at me, it might not be evident. I like food. And because beer is cooking, you design a recipe. I'm a former designer. I think about designing beers. Design in the sense that you put elements together to create an experience. I was 2 years ago in Rome, first time in that amazing city. And I stopped at the gelateria and I had a dessert called affogato. It's a vanilla gelato ice cream with an espresso poured on it and chocolate chips. And right from the first bite, I knew it would be a great mix of flavors in an imperial style. So coming back from there, I designed Nocturna Affogato, inspired from that dessert. And we do also La Grande Bellezza, inspired from an Italian pastry that I tasted at Marché Jean Talon. If food is great, wine is also, because you get great flavors, the mix of woodiness, the tannins, the structure of the wine is great. And more and more, I think we as a brewery and the market in general is going towards what I call cocktail beers. These are beers that have a very, very remote link to beer itself, as far as the experience of drinking them. The key lime is an example. You could have a sour cocktail with lime juice, and it could be like what you're drinking.
That's true.
And I think from talking to consumers that, especially the younger crowd, having come into the beer world, with New England IPAs, milkshake, and all of this. And also because in our food, in general, North American Western food is not what it was when I was a kid in the 1970s. We would have a roast, potatoes, a lot of bitter food as well, cauliflowers, turnips, and things like that. So bitterness was a very important component. Brown sauce was very present. But now these things have gone because we are in an international food culture.
That's true.
Industrialized, conditioned in a way by these design flavors. So when we get to beer as new consumers, we come from that universe, not from the traditional local universe. And my theory is that we're looking for flavors like that, and we enjoy them more.
That's very, very, very interesting. I didn't think about that. And it's true. It's very, very true. Take me back to your very, very first beer. Do you remember the first beer that you ever drank?
I was with my cousins in the Laurentians, and they were much older than I am, and I was at the time. And it was a warm summer, warm July day. I had gone to stay with them at the chalet that they have in the Laurentians, and they played a joke on me. They sent me fishing in the river where there are rocks but no fish, with nothing to drink. So I had a very long day in the sun. I walked back to their pickup, and there's a case of, I don't know, O'Keefe or Molson something, having stewed for a full day in the back of a pickup truck on a July day. And I remember opening, I had no opener, of course, and we're talking about a time when there was no twist caps on bottles. So I did that on the truck bumper, and I drank that. And from that day, I hated beer. I hated the idea of beer and taste of beer until I was in my early 20s.
Wow.
I visited Belgium and things change from them.
Belgium does have a beautiful, beautiful scene that can do that to you for sure. Do you remember that first beer that you did enjoy, the first craft beer that really turned you on to the fact that craft beer could be something more?
Yeah. I was playing rugby. We had a trainer that was Belgian or French, maybe. And he had us taste a fin du monde after a match. Very cold. And you, after a strong, strenuous sport like rugby, that was so comfortable and so relaxing that it kind of got me into having beer as a pleasurable experience or relaxant. And then I worked in design studios, and on Fridays, my boss, she would send me, and go and buy some beers for to end the week. So I would go down to SAQ and buy some beers and taste them. So it was really an experience of tasting beers from elsewhere in the world.
Is that because you didn't think that there was a craft brew scene here, or you just weren't aware of it?
I must say that back then, I was very into exotic things. And the local scene, I don't remember, aside from Unibrew and other breweries that were back in those days, that made strikingly different beers from mainstream more. But I'm probably wrong, and I apologize to my forebears. I don't remember, but there were a lot of very good beers, just that I didn't know about them.
Hmm. How about your whole brewer story? How exactly did you go from design school to running a sick-ass brewery?
I was looking for a pastime. And being a designer, you're sitting at a computer all day. You're moving pixels. You're creating communications that are not addressed to you, but to other people. Great job. It's a great career. I loved it. But I wanted to do something that I could share with people. Hmm. So it might have been cooking. It might have been many other things. But I decided to try to do beers. So I bought a beer kit, and I got super nerdy about that. I tend to be like that. When I'm passionate about something, at first I read everything. I watch everything. I listen to everything. And yeah, I started brewing beers, and the most interesting thing to me was that when you give something that you have made and that is fairly well made, and other people accept it and they have a good time consuming it, you feel good. You have a great time. If you make a cake or a piece of meat on the barbecue and people love it, and they have a great, and you see that they communicate to you that they have a great feeling from that experience that you created, makes you feel good. So from then on, I saw that I was at a point where the owners of the studio had asked me to consider buying the studio from them. And that question asked a greater question, mm-hmm. greater questions if I wanted to invest myself with greater depth into that design business. And at the time, I was starting to brew and having great time doing that. So I did not engage myself into the further on into the design business. And I started creating this business scenarios for beer.
Wow.
At first, it was a beer store.
Really?
On the Plateau Mont-Royal, where we were living, would have been kind of the SAQ of international beer. And then it was a small brewery with a counter on Mont-Royal Avenue, so that people could come buy their beer and go home, or we could deliver with bicycle kegs or beers. Mount Royal Avenue, where we were not living far off. If you translate Mont Royal to Latin, it becomes Mons Regis.
Ah, see, I didn't know where the name came from.
So that's the first version of that name. And when we moved on the South Shore to buy a house, like many people that move outside of downtowns, we were located on the South Shore, which is a region called Montérégie, which comes from region of the Mount Royal. Hmm. So the name Montérégie could be recycled and be ours.
I love it. I love it. And that bicycle delivery tap room is so avant-garde, having thought about it back then. Because it is so what it would work right now, especially with COVID happening. But it's crazy.
There are physical challenges, of course, to start a brewery in a downtown area or in a place like Plateau Mont-Royal, mm-hmm. A production brewery. Mm-hmm. It would have been fun.
Yeah, having just spoken to Mutoid, Mikrobrasi Mutoid, who just opened in Ashidaiga, I understand exactly what you're talking about. The whole getting everything set up in an old building and making it all work, very complicated, and getting the right power, if you need to get that right power for the brew system, is a nightmare too. So I completely understand where you're coming from. How about you mentioned, do you still enjoy watching people enjoy what you are creating? I know for myself as a musician, every album that we release, we're always very curious to read the comments to see if people are getting it, if they're enjoying it, or if we're going to get shat on. So do you still hunt for that feeling of the appreciation?
Yeah, it's great. And now more than ever, we are receiving very positive feedback from our peers. We had a few hiccups at the start, but now people are having a great time. And this is the most satisfying thing for me, is that we send products out there and people pay their money, and it's work.
Oh yeah.
Getting money, sending money. You have many choices of things you can buy with a dollar, figuratively speaking. And if they choose to spend it on our products and they have a good return on their investment, so to say, that is the best thing for me.
Very cool.
Because I don't make beers for myself. I make them for other people. Hmm. I'm not saying that I don't enjoy what I do. Just like a musician, you enjoy the physical act of playing and being in front of other people. I used to be a pipe organist. The physical thing, the physical sensations you get from playing an instrument, the sounds, the effects it has on your body, is also a great enjoyment. And also because you worked hard practicing. And if you get it right, and you get it to a point where it's natural, you don't have to think about it. It just happens out of your hands. It's fantastic. So it's the same with beer.
That's true. And just look how beautiful it is.
Yeah. You see, you talk about the visual aspect of it. And it's important that a beer be attractive, and especially in our days where Instagram has such a huge influence on the desire of people.
That's true. That's true. Which leads me perfectly to my next topic, which is hype. You guys don't seem to be a brewery that's chasing hype to make, you know, the trendy brews. You make brews that you think are interesting, yeah, and that you want to explore, and you're seeking that connection to food and experiences. So where do you stand on hype, and how do you feel about the breweries that are just exploding because of the hype?
I know which breweries you are referring to, and I'm certainly not going to be critical of them. I think that if you promise an experience to people, and you deliver on that experience, that expectation, and you do it well, there is nothing wrong, au contraire, to doing this. It might be a trap for themselves, because they are limiting their choices to probably what that hype brewery in the United States is doing, and that they're inspiring themselves very strongly on. They might not do things that would be interesting to them, or make create a possibility for their consumers to have a different experience. In other terms, take a risk. Recently, we did something that everybody thought we shouldn't do: a smoky stout with coffee and 106 IBUs of the hops. Normally, in 2020, you don't do something like that because this is not safe. It's not safe because you mix too many flavors that the smoky beers, smoked beers, are not currently the trendiest thing right now. But we did, and to my great surprise, people loved it. And of course, we got it out at Halloween time, and we played with Halloween visuals. So it was fun. But we are observing trends as well, and we are putting beers out there so that people desire them. Stores will want to buy the cases and offer that to their consumers, and it doesn't sit on the shelves for months because it's a brown lager and people have no knowledge how to appreciate that in our time. But we are taking risks. You try to find your place as a brewery owner, a brand owner, into a market that is has a large offer right now. So we try to be perceived as a creative brewery that do many styles and that make accessible beers, but always with a creative touch. Even when we started with a classic beer like a Weizenbach, we will add chocolate in it because it fits in it, and it's fun, and it's a different thing than the offer currently available.
That's amazing. It's amazing. And that smoky coffee stout, the breakfast of champions.
Yeah.
Was so damn good, and it was smart that show the can again so people could see it at home. How you played with Halloween coming out, and it dropped just at the right time.
Yeah, but we have three different labels, and there are two different faces on each of these labels. They are random, so if stores got a case, they might have a random amount of one design and the other design.
Super cool.
I didn't design the illustration. I'm not an illustrator. I'm more a typographer. But it was fun. And when I was a teenager, I wanted to do special makeup effects or movies and things like that. So
that's awesome.
It's a nod to based on past.
Greetings from Evergreen Podcasts. We're rolling out a listener survey, and we want to hear from you. The information in the survey will help us gather statistics and in turn make our shows more appealing to advertisers. I know most people don't like ads, but this is one of the only ways our shows make money and help keep their lights on. We promise it will only take a few minutes, but the impact on our podcasts will be tremendous. As a token of our appreciation, we'll randomly select one lucky participant each month to win an exclusive merchandise package from Evergreen Podcasts. Head to evergreenpodcast.com/listener survey to help a show and possibly get some free stuff for doing so. We can't thank you enough for the support. Now back to the show.
I remember my first beer that I had from you guys, and it was a Nocturna, and I had picked it up at Ils en Fume du Bon at Marché Jean Talon, which is one of my craft beer haunts that I like to frequent. And I remember just seeing this bottle. Super cool looking. It was always very simple.
Yeah.
The visual aspects of your beer, but always very intriguing. And just the different coffee strains. So, of course, I had to try them all. You know, I'd buy one every weekend or so and just enjoy it. Still one of my favorite beers that you guys do is the Nocturna series. So can we talk about that a little bit, where that all came from and the whole inspiration behind it?
I've always loved stouts. I'm a coffee drinker. I love tasting the notion of terroir in coffee. It's more present than it ever was. And I first did the Nocturna for the stouts. Nocturna meaning nocturne, so night in Latin. I wanted the coffee to be the star. So we do a stout that is very soft and subdued. It has all the texture. The roastiness is subdued a little. You get the color, you get the nose, but the coffee sits on top of that and things jam together.
It's so good.
So after that, we did a few coffee versions. We did a vanilla version, which we currently have in bourbon barrels.
Nice.
Now, we did the affogato, a dessert version. We have a new coffee one with a Brazilian coffee. And we'll be adding the coffee this week to one of the new version, a Kenyan coffee.
Nice, nice.
We did a test recently with a habanero peppers.
Yes.
So it's got a chocolate, lactose, and habanero peppers. Not to a point the pepper bite is more going to be a warmth.
Yeah.
A sting.
Yeah, I don't like those.
Yeah.
Overly spicy stouts. I don't get it. It ruins the balance of the beer.
Yeah.
In my opinion, for sure. I've heard a rumor, a whispering of seltzers.
Yeah, well, we'll be producing those soon. I discovered that because we do IPA cuvée extra brut.
Yeah.
There's no residual sugar in that beer. And some people really like it because there's almost no bitterness to it. It's very light. People drink it as a refreshment. It goes completely perpendicular to the very sweet IPAs that market is currently very fond of. And it's still a beer that sells well. And when I saw the seltzer concept appear in the USA, like, it's not new. It's been existing for many years. But there's a lot of consumers that do not like beer. Mm-hmm. They don't like the maltiness of it. They don't like bitterness at all as a feeling. Mm-hmm. So I thought maybe would be something interesting to try. So I did a few batches of those, like 20-liter tests, last summer. And we got tremendous feedback from that. We did a lemon, lime, pepper, and verbena version.
Very nice.
And we did one with pink. Pink lemonade, but pink grapefruit.
Yeah.
And also I did one based on a cocktail that I really like. So we'll be having a few versions of those. And the fact it's fun, it's light, and we're not using distilled alcohol in it. We're doing a complete fermentation of organic cane sugar.
Wow.
And we go towards 4.5%. So it's very drinkable, and it doesn't have a medicinal alcohol taste that some of the commercial seltzer have. And I think next summer, there's probably going to be 15, 20 breweries getting into that market because we hear the rumor in the U.S. And if you go to the SAQ and you ask them about White Claw,
yep,
the guys are amazed that they will get in a store 130 cases. And I'm not talking in Montreal. I'm talking in a small city outside. And the 130 cases will be gone in 2 days.
Hmm.
So I think there's a huge market. I think it's going to affect breweries. That's the reverse. Because all the small beers, light beers, will be challenged by that product.
Hmm.
Because people will want to discover new experiences, and it's natural. You're a musician. You're probably consuming a lot of music. I listen to all styles of music. I rarely listen to the same pieces because mm-hmm. I'm always enjoying discovering new things. So it's the same for beer or alcohol consumers.
Very, very interesting. I think you are right that it's exploding in the States. And as Alexander Kendrick, the Vox and Hops alumni, the sound engineer for Cryptopsy in the States would say, it's because the claw is the law. I personally have had a white claw. I bought one for Alexander Kendrick. And I don't drain poor things very often, but that one went straight down the drain. It's not for me. But I think that, are you one going to be the first craft beer brewery that in Quebec that's starting to do hard seltzers?
No. There's one that I think Oschlag currently.
Oh, yes. No, you're right. Yes.
Starting to produce those, probably from distilled alcohol.
You're right.
So it's water rolled.
Very cool.
I'm looking forward to tasting it.
Yeah, very, very, very interesting. I love it. Let's talk about music. We have to. It's Vox and Hops. Have you ever listened to metal music? And if you have, you just mentioned that you listen to all kinds of stuff. So what bands have you listened to or do you listen to?
I'm 50 years old now. So I listened to Metallica in the 80s when I was a young teenager, of course.
Nice.
There was a band called Barf.
There still is a band called Barf.
I just... yes, I listen to metal regularly. There's a guy in St. Bruno where we are. He is part of the band Beyond Creation.
Oh, fuck yeah. Yeah, I love them. Yeah, they're my brothers. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Great musicians.
Absolutely.
I really was amazed and impressed by the quality of their compositions.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I love melodic and symphonic metal. Yeah.
That's awesome. And my guitarist, Chris Donaldson, produces all of the Beyond Creation records. So very, very cool. Small world. I love it. How about when you guys are brewing? Do you guys listen to music? Is there a brewer's playlist? And what would be on it?
A lot of Hammond B3. Yeah. I own a Hammond. Not a
nice.
B2, but another one. There's always a keyboard. I have three keyboards here.
Really?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And I have a virtual pipe organ at home. I have a Hammond here. I have a small Yamaha Electone that I love because it has some silly effects. And I have a Italian Farfisa from 1972.
Wow.
And I've hooked a bunch of pedals on it, so it's great for distortion. And a ring modulator has an amazing impact on it. I own a synthesizer, so we listen to a lot of music, and yeah, we a lot of jazz, a lot of contemporary music. My colleague Shal knows quite well a contemporary classical music, so we listen to all kind of things. But you know, the pumps and make so much noise that we have to play it loud.
It's the only way to listen to it. How about doing some collabs? Are you a brewery that likes to do collabs with other breweries? And if you could make a collab with any band or any brewery, who would that be?
We did a collab with Betty Lux.
Nice. Yes.
Cocktail Lager last year, I believe. We do collaborations with other people like Kittel Coffee.
Mm-hmm.
For South. So we go mm-hmm. there, taste coffee with beers. Yeah. People tell us that this is one of the better coffee versions that we ever did.
Nice.
The Fazenda Barrio. If it was with a band, I would say Chromeo.
You yes. know that? Yeah,
it's,
yeah, yeah.
It's silly fun. They're great musicians. I love the way that they use the talk box, for instance. I wish I would use a talk box once in my life. we're always open to things happening. Yeah.
Very cool. And this Chromeo beer, what style of beer would it be and what would you call it?
It would be a fun cocktail beer, like broken hearted and yet in love.
I love it. One last question, Martin. It probably never happens to you because you've been doing this a long time and you're very in control, but every once in a while it happens to everyone. What is your hangover cure?
not falling on the floor. Hangover cure. You have to drink electrolytes. Mm-hmm. Gatorade is your friend. The last hangover I had was after the Mondial de la Bière when we were there like 2 years ago. And the next day we had to go and pick up things. And I was like a zombie walking around, complaining like a baby. So electrolytes, water, juice, and salt.
Awesome. Martin, thank you so much for taking the time to have a chat with me, talking about your life, talking about liking all kinds of styles of music, and of course, talking about your beautiful beers. I really appreciate it. Everyone, please go support Montrégius beers. I love them, and I'm going to support them for a very long time. Thank you so much, Martin. Cheers.
Thank you, guys. Have fun.
Hey, thank you all so much for listening right to the end. Man, what an insightful discussion. I really, really enjoy the way that Martin approaches beer. It is very close to experiences. He's trying to mimic an experience, and I think that is very, very, very cool. Tying it into experiences with food, experiences with life in general. I think that is a very, very insightful way to look at craft beer, and I would love for more brewers to do that rather than just jumping on the hype train and making what other people are doing. Be creative, be like Martin, be like Montrégius, Bière Artisanale, because they are doing some awesome, awesome, awesome stuff here in Quebec. And if you can get your hands on some, absolutely do that, because I know that I pick one up whenever I see one. Tomorrow, we get the new installment of the Brutal Awakenings playlist, which has been curated by Jerry Monk, the metal architect himself. Jerry has picked all of the newest, sickest, heaviest, most extreme, most interesting new releases, which just came out today, and has put that all into the playlist for us. Trust me, this is the playlist you want to listen to. Get ready for the Brutal Awakenings playlist. If you enjoyed this Vox and Hops episode, you should absolutely subscribe to it on the podcast platform of your choice. But not only that, you should take the time to rate it and write a review, because if you do that, more people just like yourself will be able to discover the Vox and Hops podcast. Vox and Hops is brought to you by Sound Talent Media. I hope you all have an excellent weekend. I hope you take the time to relax. I hope you take the time to enjoy life, metal, and craft beer, because I know that's what I'm going to be doing. I'll be back next week with two episodes. But until then, remember to enjoy life, metal, and craft beer. Cheers, Vox and Hops heads.
Bowie, Dylan, Marley. You've heard the names and maybe you've heard their songs, but what about the stories behind the records that made titans of music like these so universally loved and important? Join me, Josh Adam Myers, host of The 500, as each week I go through a different album from Rolling Stone magazine's 500 Greatest Albums list from 2012 with an incredible lineup of comedians, actors, and musicians talking about how the music has impacted their lives. New episodes of The 500 come out every Wednesday. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.